Welcome to today's Pacific Basin 2016 third quarter trading update conference call. With us today are CEO, Mr. Mats Berglund, and CFO, Mr. Andrew Bromhead. For the first part of this call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterward, there'll be a question and answer section. Mr. Mats Berglund, please begin.
Thank you, and welcome, everyone. Thanks for calling in and for your interest in our company. I would like to give you a brief update on the company and the market developments in the third quarter. As mentioned, I'm accompanied by our CFO, Andrew Bromhead, who will join me in answering any questions after I have talked you through the slides. Please turn to slide two. The dry bulk freight markets for all bulk carrier types have improved from the historically low base recorded in the first quarter. Handysize and Supramax market index rates averaged about $5,500 and $6,700 per day net, respectively, in the third quarter. These average market rates represent a more than 20% improvement on the previous quarter, but an 8% and 20% decline compared to the same period last year, illustrating that freight conditions remain depressed and conditions are still challenging for shipowners. Slide three, our TCE numbers. In the context of the improved but still depressed market conditions, we generated average Handysize and Supramax daily TCE earnings of about $7,000 and $7,400 per day net in the third quarter. Year to date, our average Handysize and Supramax TCE earnings have outperformed the Baltic Handysize and Supramax indexes by 44% and 21%, respectively. We have covered 74% of our contracted Handysize revenue days in the final quarter of 2016 at around $8,000 per day net, and 75% of our contracted Supramax days at around $7,500 per day. For next year, we have so far secured cover of 18% of our Handysize revenue days in 2017 at around $9,500 per day net, and 27% of our contracted Supramax days at around $11,400 per day. Slide four. While our outperformance figures and business model remain robust, the dry bulk market continues to be challenging, with average industry freight earnings at loss-making levels. We're continuing our various initiatives to further reduce our costs, including reducing vessel operating costs through scale benefits without compromising safety and maintenance. In the first half of 2017, we will be relocating our Hong Kong headquarters out of Hong Kong's central business district, which will lead to a significant cost saving while allowing us to create a modern and efficient working environment in a newly revitalized part of Hong Kong Island. We're establishing a new commercial office in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, towards the end of 2016 to help grow our cargo volumes and to support our many customers in the East Coast of South America. We have substantially completed our exit from non-dry bulk activities, but the significant reduction in oil, gas, mining, and Middle East construction activity is causing a deterioration in tug and barge values. This creates a challenging backdrop for the disposal of our limited remaining towage assets. At the end of June, our towage assets had a net book value of approximately $18 million, since which time we have agreed a sale subject to completion of further towage assets. This is expected to generate cash proceeds of just over $3 million, but result in a book loss of about $2 million. Based on these expected losses, additional disposal losses or impairments on our remaining towage assets are possible at the year-end. However, none of our remaining towage assets are mortgaged, and any disposals contribute cash to the company. Slide number five for a look at what's happening on the demand side. The table on this slide summarizes Clarkson Plato's full year 2016 forecast for global dry bulk volumes, which are expected to grow about 1% year-on-year. Overall, effective dry bulk demand, also including ton-mile changes, congestion, and other effects, is estimated to have increased by about 1.5% in the year-to-date, with a forecasted 1.8% increase for the full year. A strong South American agricultural export season in the first half of the year was followed by seasonally strong U.S. export volumes in the third quarter. And you can see in the table 5% growth in soybeans, 2% increase in grain, and the growth in other cargoes we carry, such as copper, sugar, and cement, was also robust. Year-to-date, Chinese dry bulk imports have increased 6.5% compared to the same period last year, with growth most notably in iron ore and coal imports. The latter, the coal, primarily due to China's reduced domestic coal production. Logs-fitted ships like ours benefited from a year-on-year increase in logs volumes, but Chinese steel exports softened in the third quarter, having peaked at historic high levels in June. Slide six, turning to the supply side. New ship ordering activity was basically zero during the third quarter, and that is good news for the future. Fleet growth is reducing, and we expect the global dry bulk fleet in the full year to grow about 2%, its lowest rate in 13 years. While scrapping was very high in the first half of the year, scrapping activity reduced in the third quarter, partly due to the monsoon season, but also due to the improved freight rates. We expect new ship deliveries of about 6% for the full year and scrapping of about 4%, resulting in approximately 2% net growth in global dry bulk capacity for the full year 2016. Slide 7, summarizing the fundamentals for this year 2016, it looks like effective demand growth will be around 1.5 to 2%, and net fleet growth about the same, hence offsetting each other. Going forward, though, a few factors are expected to impact the supply side for the better. Firstly, fewer and fewer new ships are delivering from the yards in 17 and 18. Secondly, the higher oil prices are positive for the freight market, as this allows freight rates room to recover without being undermined by faster speeds, which increase supply. And thirdly, the entry into force of the Ballast Water Management Convention in September 2017 will add to existing pressures on owners to scrap older and poorly performing ships rather than invest in costly ballast water treatment systems and dry dockings. That will help to shrink the oversupply. Slide 8, showing the development of vessel values. The significant gap between new building and secondhand prices continues to discourage new ship ordering activity, which logically has basically come to a complete stop. As you can see in the graph, there is some life in secondhand values, and Clarkson Plato's estimate values of benchmark 5-year-old Handysize bulk carriers to have increased to 10.5 million, representing a 13% improvement from the market low values recorded in the second quarter. New building prices have held at 19.5 million. Slide 9, as regards an update on balance sheet matters. At the half year, we had a cash position of 406 million. This will reduce since, as expected and planned for, the holders of our $124 million US dollar 2018 convertible bonds did exercise their put option right in September, and this convertible bond will be repaid on 24th October 2016, later this month. The redemption payment obligation is covered by the net proceeds of the $143 million raised through our rights issue in June. A number of efficient, well-designed new ships are currently delivering into our fleet, and the last of our new buildings delivers to us in the second quarter of 2017. It's 12 new ships coming to us during the second half this year and first half next year. This shows in the graph by the $237 million of CapEx commitments spread over the second half 2016 and the first half of 2017, which will be funded by our remaining undrawn Japanese export credit facilities of $238 million, and the ability to draw down a further $34 million of secured borrowing facilities. Slide 10. In closing, while the dry bulk freight rates have improved from the historically low base in the first quarter, the market remains oversupplied and conditions are still challenging for ship owners. Average industry freight earnings are still at loss-making levels. Self-correcting supply side dynamics, however, are at work, but it will take some more time and more scrapping for the market to return to a healthier balance. Hence, we are continuing to manage our business for a weak market in the medium term. That means continuing our efforts to further reduce our costs without compromising safety and maintenance, and it means conducting our business efficiently and to astutely combine ships and cargoes to maximize our margins. Thank you again for calling in, and I now invite you to ask any questions. Operator?
Thank you. We'll now begin our question and answer sections. If you have a question for today's speaker, please press zero and one on your telephone keypad and you will enter a queue. After you are announced, please ask your question. If you find that your question has been answered before it's your turn to speak, please press zero two to cancel the question. So once again, zero one on your telephone keypad now to ask a question. Our first question is Joe Lyle from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. My question relates to the market. Do you think the worst is behind us, given that rates have picked up from historical low levels? And incrementally, are you feeling a little bit more positive on the outlook now versus, let's say, 3 months ago? And I do take in fully the fact that you're still looking at a very challenging market, but incrementally, would you say you are feeling a bit more positive now?
Thanks, Joe. Yes, I do think we are working through the order book, right? For every day that's passing, the order book is reducing. Nobody's ordering new ships, and gradually, the supply fundamentals do look better. So I would answer yes on that question. We do highlight that we are not through the weak market. It takes some more time, but I think, you know, for every day that's passing, we're getting closer to better times.
Thank you. I've got another question, if I may, and this is for Andrew, and it's got to do with the numbers. So bear with me a little while I go through the numbers. So I'm trying to work out whether you were profitable in the third quarter, and I know you may be limited in what you can say, but just hear me out in what I've done. I've looked at your interim report, where you've got daily cash cost disclosed for your Handysize and your Supramax fleet, and you've also disclosed your overheads on a per ship per day basis. So I've worked out to something like $6,600-$6,700 per day per vessel as your cost. And if I compare that to your TCE per day of about $7,000 for Handysize and about $7,400 for Supramax, it implies you made a profit in the pure dry bulk business in the third quarter. Could you comment on that in whatever way you can? Thank you.
Sure, thank you very much, Joe. You're right, we are a bit constrained. This is only a trading update and not a full P&L update. Yes, you have correctly identified the cash flows out of page 8 of the interim report. When trying to project those forward into the third quarter, you need to reflect on page 12 of the interim report, which looks at the commitments of the vessels that we have. Because as you are aware, we do use a number of short-term vessels, particularly in the Supramax. So you don't have the costs of any new charters which we have entered into. And those would be at market rates, and in particular in the Supramax subsection, have an impact on what our overall performance has been. But I think sort of standing back and looking that, yes, the market rates are improving a little bit, but that does mean that new chartered in vessels will also be increasing in their costs to where they were, you know, at the end of the first quarter and going into the second quarter. So I hope that gives you some guidance.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. I do appreciate that rather than...
If I can just add, Joe, right, that, you know, the owned costs do not vary that much, right? As we highlight, we try to work on trimming our OPEX without compromising safety and maintenance. But the owned costs are above $8,000 per day. You know, in the interim report, we describe them as, for the first half 16, as 8.1 on Handysize and 8.8 on Supramax. So it's no secret that the earnings we generate are below the break-even level of the own costs, right? And these costs also exclude G&A. So I think that you can figure out that we are losing money on our long-term charters. We are making money on our operating activity, i.e. the short-term ships that we take in. That we combine with cargoes and make a margin, and they are to some degree offsetting each other. You know, the losses on the long-term charters and the profits on the short-term operating activity. But we are losing. We are not at profit-making levels on the owned ships. We are above cash levels, but not above P&L break-even levels on the owned ships, Joe.
Thank you very much, Matt and Andrew. That really helps.
Our next question is Greg Muller from Fair Place.
Hi, Matt. This one is for you. When you talk about managing for the medium term, what sort of timeline are you talking about? And on the scrapping, has Pac Basin have you scrapped any of your own ships?
We have not scrapped any of our own ships. Our oldest ship is 16 years old and in very good shape. So we don't have any 20 plus year old ships. As regards medium term, we are consciously a bit unprecise there, right? So I think you have to interpret that as, and we do say that we are relying more on our growing owned fleet. We're not taking long-term charters in. We are topping up with short-term ships because they are at lower rate levels than long-term charters. So as we get into 2017, the order book is smaller. Fewer ships are coming in from the shipyards in 18, even fewer. If scrapping is picking up, driven on partly by the ballast water treatment rules and dry docking costs, scrapping should continue at decent levels. We will see a fleet reduction. Demand is growing, as we pointed out, with 1.5% or 2%. So things should get gradually better, but it's very difficult in this business to pinpoint, you know, exactly when things are changing dramatically. But I think we've expressed that we think we're past the worst. Things should gradually get better, but it will take some time. So sorry for not being so precise there, but we simply cannot be that.
For sure, understand. Thank you very much.
Our next question is Yang Liu from Deutsche Bank.
Good evening, Matt. Good evening, Andrew. Thank you for taking my questions. I'm more looking at the CB side. Three questions. When I compare your latest earnings days cover just released with the numbers released for the interim result, I noticed a quite steady performance for the additional orders taken in the new reporting period for the handy size. However, for the Supermax, it looks like the additional orders are yielding probably just at the par, generating the same earnings as the spot rate. Could you comment what's the reason? That's the first question. Second, regarding your still on the Supermax, your orders for next year, for 2017, for the Supermax looks larger than the number you released for the Q3 2015. Does that mean you got more longer-term contracts? Number three question, do you have any, is there any plan change in terms of vessel delivery in the second half of this year? Thank you.
So thanks for those questions. The first one was on the Supramax new cover, so to speak, and that it looks a bit on the low side to you. The short-term vessel activity or operating activity, arbitrage activity on the Supramax side is very large. If you look in our fleet, you will typically find that about only one third of our Supramax fleet is owned and long-term chartered ships, and two thirds of our Supramax activity is very opportunistic, short-term operating activity. And we've been through a period of extremely low Supramax rates. That doesn't stop us from trying to make money, right? And Panamax rates have actually, there's been many periods, including still, but Panamax rates are actually cheaper than Supramax rates. So we actually take in Panamax ships. We report that in our Supramax segment because it's really the same business, but sometimes we take a Panamax if it's a bigger ship that's even cheaper than a Supramax. What I'm trying to get to is that, you know, if we take in a ship, you know, let's say we get a customer calling us and say he's got a cargo and he's prepared to pay X dollars, we don't necessarily say no to that just because it's a low rate, right? We try to find a ship in the market at an even lower rate, and we combine those two and we make a profit. So we may take a cargo that pays only $4,000 per day. If we can get a ship in at $3,000 per day, that's still a good deal, right? But that $3,000, that affects the gross total aggregate TCE that you are analyzing. So two-thirds of the Supermax activity is of the nature that I just described. So that kind of lowers the total TCE number, but it also lowers the cost of our chartering cost, as Andrew pointed out. So does that make any sense? Can you follow that to some degree? Handy size, though, right? Our handy size, we have a larger owned and long-term chartered fleet, so it's kind of the reverse there. About two-thirds of our handy size activity is owned and long-term chartered ships, and a smaller portion is operating activity. The Supramax operating activity has grown quite a bit due to increased steel parceling activity, etc. That we have successfully taken advantage of the increased Chinese steel exports. So that's mainly the reason. The Supramax gross TCE is a bit distorted by a large percentage operating activity. The second question. You asked the 2017 cover looks better, and it's partly the same answer, right? You know, when we go out through 17, we have none of this operating activity, and you can see that it's not that many days, right? So for 17, it's only the committed days today, which is only our owned and long-term charters, and we've got some decent contracts there that shows a high number. But the actual total TCE that we will report for that period will be heavily influenced by adding a lot of operating activity, right? So appreciate this gets a little bit complicated for you to model, but that's the way it is.
Okay.
And your third question, what was that?
Vessel delivery plan.
Yes, vessel delivery plan. We have... As it looks like, right, some of them are just around year end, so it may change. But, you know, in our interim report, we reported 12 new buildings. One has delivered so far, and there's 11 to come. Four of those 11 is scheduled to come this side of year end, and seven vessels are scheduled to come in the first half next year.
So it was we still stick to that plan, or there's a potential delay, or that's what I'm trying to get.
No, we're sticking to that plan. We have previously pushed a couple of the ships, but that was done a while back. So we don't expect any changes to this plan.
Okay, thank you very much.
As a reminder, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now to ask a question. Our next question is King Tam from Daiwa Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, Matt and Andrew. Simple questions for myself. In terms of the outperformance, Just noticed that in the third quarter, the outperformance is a little bit sort of lower than historical averages. So I'm just wondering whether it's the same, I think explanation that you gave before, where on a rising sort of spot market, the outperformance looks, is a little bit distorted by a rising spot market, or is there any other factors that can explain it?
No, the main explanation is the one you mentioned, right? That in a falling market, our outperformance tends to expand, and in a rising market, our outperformance tends to narrow. It's still significant, right? With roughly $2,000 per day, almost $2,000 per day for the 9 months on Handysize. In Supramax, it is also influenced by the operating activity that I mentioned, right? So the outperformance vis-a-vis index is not necessarily the best KPI for the Supramax activity because such a large portion of that is operating activity. And there the margin per day is the interesting one, right? You know, we can take in a Panamax at even $2,000 per day and we don't care if the TCE is only $3,000 per day so long as we make $1,000 margin. That drags down the total TCE, and hence it drags down our outperformance versus the index. But it's not the right KPI. The outperformance versus index is the right KPI for our owned and long-term chartered ships, while the margin per day is the right KPI on our operating activity.
Yeah, I am looking at the dollar margin. Just looking at three-quarter, for example, 3Q. For Handysize, about 1,005, which is just a bit under second Q and definitely the first quarter. And Supramax is also about 600-something. It's a bit higher than second quarter, 500, but again, lower than first quarter and historicals.
Yeah, it's really the delay effect, right? I think you referred to yourself at the last earnings call, tried to explain, right, that the indexes are reported daily. So when we compare with the third quarter index, it's each daily index during the third quarter. However, our actual earnings are happening about 45 days on average after we fix the ship. So we fix the ship today at today's market. We're not going to report those earnings until around 45 days later, sometimes 60 days later. So it's a bit of a delay. So that has this effect that that I just described, right? So in a rising market, there's a little bit of a delay effect before our earnings kick in. And when we have, we had the very low dip in February, we reported higher outperformance numbers logically in the first quarter because we were still, earning from fixtures done in December and January. And now when rates turn around, it's the other way around, and we're still suffering somewhat from fixtures that were done a few months back during the third quarter reporting period.
Yeah, okay, understood, thank you. One more question on the, just on the financing aspect. Notice it's a good thing that your the secondhand values, the prices are up from the historical lows earlier this year. But just wondering whether you can give any, commentaries on any discussions in banks so far in terms of rolling over debt as well as LTV ratios.
Yes, well, I think as we discussed at the annual results announcement, at the interim results announcement, a challenging market for most shipping companies. We have been in compliance with our loan covenants, and you can probably anticipate that with secondhand values increasing, that's likely to ease things a little bit for a number of ship owners. So I think that will be a logical conclusion with secondhand or fair market values of global fleets slightly increasing, and as time passes, of course, the values of ships will depreciate and loans get repaid. So I think you can probably consider that life has got very slightly better as opposed to continuing to get worse.
Okay, but in terms of the your 80 million or so debt to be repaid next year, have you sort of started any discussions in terms of refinancing those or pushing out the maturity?
We've never entered into any loan restructuring agreements to push out maturities. Obviously, some of our peer group are quite active in doing that. We have undertaken a rights issue in the beginning of this year to underline the ability of PB to access cash, appropriate cash, throughout all stages of the market. That clearly has strengthened the position of the company compared to where we were at the annual results and where we were at the interim. So no, there is no need with a strengthening of the balance sheet to be entertaining pushing out debt repayments. That wouldn't be a very logical thing for us to want to do.
Okay. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Matt.
Our next question is Giovanni from Sudaram Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi. Hello. Just a quick question from my side. So you said that you are not entering in any new long-term chartering contract for the Handy size. So can you give us an idea of the pace of decline of your chartering days for this segment? And another question about the second-hand market, if you bought or if you're going to, are you planning to buy any second-hand ship?
All right. Thank you. As regards the expiry of long-term charters. We disclosed that in our interim report, page 12. You have a year-by-year list there of the days and the rates, etc. So you can go in there and see how they trickle off. As mentioned, we are not replacing them with other long-term charters. We are instead taking delivery of excellent Japanese, very well-performing new buildings, and we are using a lot of short-term ships since they are at lower charter rates. As regards buying ships, we are looking at that carefully, but also cautiously. We continue to manage for a weak market in the medium term, so we don't see a rush in getting into more ships. We have already positioned ourselves very well, in our view, for an increase in the market with a much increased owned fleet. And we are continuing to prioritize the safety and stability and a strong balance sheet and cash position. But we are looking at deals. You know, many ships that are for sale are Chinese built and not of the best design and performance. So those ships are not interesting to us. What we do study and what we encourage other people to study is to use this opportunity. As mentioned, we don't have any 20-plus-year-old ships or poor-performing ships, but if you do have such ships, you know, take the opportunity now to scrap them and trade up to a younger ship, because, you know, young ships are extremely attractively priced at this time, right? So that arbitrage is something that we can look at, but we often find that our existing ships are in so much better shape than the ships available in the market. So far we haven't pulled off any such arbitrage deal, but you know, we could sell our oldest 16-year-old ship and buy a 5-year-old instead or something like that, right? You know, you don't have to put up so much money in between to get 10-15 years of extra trading life. So it's something we're looking at, but we're continuing to prioritize safety and stability and managing for a weak market for a while longer.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is Bo Sen from Alcan Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, this is Mohsin. A couple of questions for me. Can you provide some more granular details as to what exactly the loan covenants are, how much room you have on those loan covenants, and when those covenants are tested?
Andrew?
Yes, well, the key loan covenant that we have is in relation to the loan to value. We do not have covenants in relation to interest cover, EBITDA, or some of the other more traditional public debt issue type covenants. So loan to values are tested broadly every 6 months. The timing is usually tied into the time of the original drawdown as opposed to any particular calendar period of time.
And how much room do you have on those LTV ratios?
Well, we've never commented on that, and other than to point out that we are in compliance with our loan covenants, which gives you the comfort that we have not breached anything.
The comment earlier about not getting into discussions with respect to rescheduling the ongoing amortization payments, I just wanted to touch upon that again. I mean, look, it does look like things have turned, and obviously this quarter's performance was very impressive, but the amount of operating cash flow that you guys are generating is very, very minimal, which means that the future amortization payments will be coming out of your cash balance. And, you know, these banks are going to be, you know, dealing with rescheduling of loans across all of their other customers, it might actually make sense to, you know, be the first one in front of them and try to, you know, reschedule this amortization payment now before the banks lose the flexibility to do so. Does that not make more sense?
Well, firstly, we need to remind ourselves that we have in total undrawn committed bank facilities of $272 million, so which is well in excess of the capital commitments that we have. So there is that element. As has been commented, the, you know, the market rates have improved from where they were in the first and second quarters, which means that cash flows are going to be increasing as opposed to decreasing. In relation to the timing of negotiations, I think we can all see that a number of companies, listed companies, have over the last 12 months already been in active discussions with banks, probably not out of choice. So from our perspective, you know, one of the key tenets of Pacific Basin is that we honour our commitments. The scheduled loan repayments that you can see on slide 9 are not, in our opinion, unduly unmanageable, and therefore we have not been in discussions with banks over delaying those repayments. And I'm not sure that that would send the right message for Pacific Basin to be engaged in this activity at the back end of other people's forced discussions.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you for that answer. My last question for you would be just in terms of seasonality. We are entering the seasonally weak portion towards the end of this year. Can you comment a little bit more about where you see TCE rates trending currently and by the end of this year, and how much of a drop we should be expecting?
We cannot really comment too much on that, because it would be represent a forecast. I would point out to you that seasonality in dry bulk is not at all that consistent. You know, the fourth quarter is sometimes a very strong season, driven in our case by the North American, the Northern Hemisphere grain season. With a lot of cargoes moving primarily out of the U.S. Gulf, and we're seeing that that now. We've had the last 2 years have been strong in the third quarter due to an increased South American grain export, much driven by the weaker South American currencies vis-a-vis the U.S. dollar. Primarily in 2015, we saw that effect. So South America took market share from North America, and that partly led to a stronger third quarter. But, you know, it's extremely difficult, and I would suggest somewhat dangerous to plan for and bank on the same seasonality occurring every year. If you go back and track the various years, you have very different behavior there, so I will not comment on whether we will see a drop or not. It's encouraging comments on volumes out of the U.S. Gulf we hear from the grain traders on soybeans and corns, etc. But you know, this market is also driven by the other commodities, including coal, and coal we've seen some, you know, big reductions and then big increases again from China, due to political reasons. We have seen market effects driven by matters such as the Indonesian export ban a few years back, etc. Right, so these things mess up seasonality quite a lot. So it's very tricky. We have to look at the fundamentals overall gradually getting better as we eat through the previously two large deliveries from the shipyards, and as the deliveries are gradually reducing, we're getting into better fundamentals. Just to mention one more kind of wild card or thing that's also difficult to predict, right, is the oil price. And it is somewhat counterintuitive, the effect on dry bulk. The higher oil prices are positive because it allows freight rates to increase without a higher speed spitting out as the optimal speed in the voyage calculations, right? So that's another factor that, that can affect the dry bulk market that's very hard to predict. We apologize for not being able to be more precise on the forecasting, but that's just the market that, that we are in.
No, no, thank you very much for these answers. These are very great answers, and I appreciate it. I'll follow up with more questions offline, but in the meantime, congrats on a very good quarter.
Thank you.
Our next question is Steve Wong from BlackRock. Please go ahead.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Just a quick question on page 3 regarding the 2017 cover rates as well as the percentage of contracted covers. Can I seek your comments on the number? If we see that 2017, the cover rate seems to be much higher than 2016 year-to-date number. Is it any indication of the 2017 demand? And also on the percentage, which is 18% and 27% respectively for Handysize and Supermax, is it normal compared to the previous year regarding this level? Thank you.
Third quarter last year, we reported 20% cover on both the Handysize and Supermax, so not a big change there. The reason for why those dollar per day numbers are higher is primarily because they are representing cargo contracts that were entered into during previous years. They are the few long-term cargo contracts that we have from the years when rates were higher. It is hard to add more cover at these levels. The only chance would be to do a real long, you know, convince a charterer to do a real long-term rate. But, you know, shippers unfortunately get used to the weak spot rates, and cargo contracts are few and far between these days. I would draw your attention to slide number 12 in the appendix, where you have all the details on the forward cover and also the number of days, right? So I repeat again, right, that especially for Supermax, it is correct that it's 27%, but it's only of our owned and long-term chartered ships. So our actual reported numbers for 2017 will be heavily influenced by a lot of short-term activity, right? So assuming freight rates are around the levels we're seeing now, those numbers will come down quite a lot. But it obviously helps to some degree to have these previously entered into cargo contracts. And, you know, referring back to one of the earlier questions, you know, it's harder to get these type of rate levels on cargo contracts today, so that benefit is kind of gradually a little bit reducing as well as time goes by. Hopefully it will turn again, and again we'll be able to enter into decent cargo contracts. But today we are a bit cautious to lock in. We don't want to lock in loss-making levels on cargo contracts, right? So we're staying shorter on the term that we're doing. Was there another question there, or does that answer your question?
Yep. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As a reminder, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now to ask a question. As a reminder, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now to ask a question. There are currently no more questions. Now I pass back to management for conclusion. Thank you.
So just thanks, everybody, again for calling in, and don't hesitate to follow up with us if you have further questions. Thank you very much.
This concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. Goodbye.